Our next speaker is Morgan Davis, who is doing some exciting work in Iowa on saturated buffers.
Good morning. Thank you for being here, and today I'm going to talk to you a little bit about greenhouse gas emissions from two saturated buffers that are located in Hamilton County, Iowa. So this is on the Des Moines Lobe in central Iowa. So first, I'm just going to give some general saturated buffer background, how they work, and the removal rates we've seen so far. And then I'll get into some of the specific objectives of the greenhouse gas emissions, go through some methods, and a first year of results. So there are several consequences of excess nitrate in our streams, and I'm surprised no one has brought up the hypoxic zone, and I guess I'll be the first person to say hypoxia this morning. But that's kind of, we kind of beat that like a dead horse. But something new and exciting in Iowa is there is a lawsuit going on, and so it's actually made public media, the Des Moines Register. The Des Moines Water Works has the world's largest nitrate removal facility to provide drinking water for around 500,000 people. And they are currently filing a lawsuit to sue drainage districts in three counties in northwest Iowa. So it's been interesting to see that kind of develop. We have commercials popping up in Iowa, but it's interesting to see it in public media. The Mississippi River, or Mississippi Watershed Nutrient Reduction Strategy and the Iowa Nutrient Reduction Strategy have proposed some solutions to nitrate entering streams. We've heard about some of these this morning. We have bioreactors and wetlands, along with cover crops and saturated buffers. And so all of these solutions work in kind of one or two ways. You're either getting nitrate removal through denitrification or through plant uptake. So I'm going to focus on kind of whether that denitrification is complete or incomplete in saturated buffers. But first I'm going to start out explaining what a saturated buffer is, and I want to thank the Frankenberger group for this excellent diagram, because it really helps it helps explain this in a nice way. So typically a conventional tile is routed straight through the stream. So if there's any perennial vegetation between the field and the stream, the water moves straight through. A saturated buffer works by intercepting that water in a distribution box and then forcing that water into a pipe that runs parallel to the stream in the field. And then by gravity, that water has to seep from the distribution pipe to the stream. During high flow events, there is an overflow pipe to keep water from backing up into the field. So we'll kind of discuss some of the limitations that causes. So both of our buffers are located in the South Skunk River watershed, and Bear Creek was established in 2010. And from 2010 to 2014, it received water from 10 hectares. And then, unfortunately, due to some retiling that happened on that field, we now only receive water from 3 hectares. It is also a mixed, it is grass from the field, about 6 meters from the field, and then the rest is forested. It was originally planted switchgrass, but there's a lot of reed canary grass and brome grass, and now and a lot of silver maples in that forested section. Our South Skunk site is very similar. It is actually drains into a tributary of the South Skunk, so it's essentially just a drainage ditch. But this site is all in grasses. So I'm just going to give a summary of the nitrate removal. This is kind of the average over the both sites over the past 5 years. 91% of the nitrate that is diverted into that lateral tile has been found to be removed. We've placed wells throughout the buffer, and we have higher nitrate concentrations close to that distribution pipe, and then as you move towards the stream, they drop off pretty rapidly. However, of the flow that leaves the field, only 36 to about 64% of that water makes it into the distribution tile. So that gives us a total removal rate over the years that has ranged from a 32% to 58%. I hope that was clear enough. And that has been, we've had total nitrogen removed of anywhere from 59 kilograms in a year to 290. So one of the questions we have wanted to ask is, what is the fate of that nitrogen? Is it being completely denitrified, or is there a large, are plants uptaking it? Kind of what's going on? If denitrification is the main source of removal, and that denitrification is incomplete, we can get we potentially could have large production of nitrous oxide, which would be trading kind of a water quality problem for an air quality problem. So a lot of these studies have been set up for wetlands and bioreactors to see what is coming off. So we wanted to quantify the greenhouse gas emissions and then also measure the dissolved concentrations in the wells that we have throughout the buffer. So for terrestrial gas sampling, we use the GraceNet protocol, and we take a sample every 15 minutes on one of these vented chambers. Then we use linear regression to measure a flux from the soil surface. We have also equipped these with some automated samplers that will hopefully have a methods paper coming out soon. So those are nice because you can just kind of set it and let it run, and it collects the samples over the 45 minutes, and you don't have to come back every 15 minutes. And then we measured cumulative greenhouse gas emissions using linear interpolation between sampling events. So this is our setup for Bear Creek, and the main thing to get from this figure is that saturated group 1 is closer to the distribution tile than saturated group 2. So we wanted to see if there's higher nitrous coming off in that section versus the one closer to the stream. And then we've also set up a transect of unsaturated rings to kind of do a little bit of a comparison. The South Sunk site is very similar, and the unsaturated section just kind of flipped there. So I'm going to go through three figures of nitrous oxide, carbon dioxide, and methane emissions. And so these are cumulative emissions over a year. We started last fall, and so typically this data is displayed kind of from January to December, and you have a curve coming up. But we have a year of data. It's just not presented like it usually is. However, we can see that there's more nitrous oxide nitrogen coming off the saturated portions of the buffer compared to the unsaturated portions. And for this year of data, it ranged from anywhere from 2 kilograms of nitrous oxide nitrogen to 3 per year. But this isn't all, it kind of looks bad. But I don't think it is necessarily, because if we are treating nitrates, so this nitrogen would have just made it straight to the stream. And so it's kind of wordy at the bottom, but we're anyway from kind of 0.002 kilograms of nitrous oxide nitrogen per kilogram removed. So this is the production of nitrous oxide per kilogram removed. And both of those are pretty low. We do not see a similar trend for carbon dioxide emissions. The saturated portion is not producing more CO2 than the unsaturated portion. And for methane, if anything, we're seeing absorption of methane into the soil. The standard errors on these data points are pretty high. It's essentially zero. We've had a lot of negative data from the South Skunk site, but if anything, these systems seem to be kind of a net sink for methane rather than production. For our dissolved gas collection, we sampled each of the wells that are distributed throughout the buffer, and we put the well sample into a evacuated vial and then measure through headspace the concentration of the dissolved gases that are in they're in the samples. So Okay. No, I don't know if I'm touching anything. All right. So I'm just going to move on. So we have a similar set of grouping is how I'm going to present the data. Again, well, group one is closer to the distribution tile, and two is further away, and then we have our unsaturated. And so what we see for dissolved nitrous oxide nitrogen at the South Skunk site is very high concentrations at the well transects that are closest to the distribution tile, and then as we move towards those well transects that are further away, that dissolved nitrous drops off. And as you can see, the green is unsaturated, and I kept this figure this way because I kind of wanted to show a point that we really don't see any dissolved nitrous oxide in the unsaturated portions. It's very small compared to the saturated side. At Bear Creek, the setup's a little different. We have kind of three transects or groups moving towards the stream, and so the data started out to be very similar to the South Skunk site, where we have the highest nitrous oxide nitrogen in the transect closest to the distribution tile, and then it drops off as we move towards the stream. However, the last four or five sampling events, we've actually seen higher nitrous in that last transect, and this is all because of one well. In our data set. I didn't consider taking it out because I think it's important to realize that there may be different pathways through this buffer that are not promoting maximum denitrification. That well also has kind of higher nitrate compared to all the other wells on the transect. So we might need to put in some more wells, which we've done, and kind of sample around and see what's going on there. So to conclude, I just want to again repeat that nitrous oxide emissions are greater under these saturated conditions. However, they only make up kind of a small proportion of that total in removed. And then we, in general, see dissolved nitrous oxide concentrations highest in the wells closest to that distribution pipe. I also want to do a plug for a coupled study. Tyler Groh has a poster tomorrow that is on denitrification rates in these systems, so not just quantifying the nitrous oxide that's going on, but what are the potential denitrification rates of these systems. And with that, thank you, and I'll take any questions.
Thank you. We have time for one or two questions. Mark?
Yeah. Great presentation.
Thank you.
Compared to wetlands or compared to the adjacent fields, what's the relative relationship of
That is thank you so much for asking that question, because that is a point I forgot to make. I'm actually going to go back to that slide. And so this is at the low end of fertilized corn. So nitrous oxide, nitrogen concentrations for fertilized corn are anywhere kind of from 5 to 8, I would say, in other literature. And that's something that we are doing. We are also starting to take measurements in the field to have that kind of direct comparison of this is what's going on in the field, and then also on the buffer and the unsaturated portion of the buffer.
And the wetland comparison, do you know from Hunter's work or down there what
kind of nitrous oxide
coming off wetland?
Yeah, I should know those numbers. I think they're probably similar, if not a little lower, is what I would say. I would say lower.
Okay, Jorge, one more.
Yeah, I don't know if you have compared to the IPCC methodology, but if you use the coefficient factors, I think those numbers are higher than, if you do the CR1 IPCC emission factor of the indirect N2O coming from the nitrogen leaching. So.
Higher in the dissolved well concentrations?
Those rates of N2O, if I did my math right, are higher than using the IPCC tier 1 indirect N2O emissions. So, the methodology, 30% get lost.
Yeah.
How much from the nitrogen leaching and how much of the nitrogen leaching gets converted to N2O? They are low, but they're still high compared to.
I think.
That's a good point. We'll move on, I think.
Okay.
Thank you.